Hey guys, and welcome to Hunting Land, presented by Great Days Outdoors Magazine. If you'd like to stay up to date on hunting tactics, land management, land values, and land market dynamics, this is the podcast for you. This week's show is brought to you by NCX. As a landowner, the more income I can generate from my land, the better I can take care of it. That's why I trust NCX. They've helped over 20,000 landowners across America earn more than $20 million through programs like carbon credits, wildlife habitat enhancement, solar energy development, sustainable timber management, and more. Want to see what your land could be earning? Visit ncx.com and discover the funding opportunities available to you. And as a Great Days Outdoors listener, you get your first month of NCX membership free. Just use the code GREAT at checkout and unlock the potential of your land today. Again, that's the code GREAT at ncx.com. Air Medcare. Did you know every 40 seconds someone has a heart attack or stroke? In that moment, every second counts and every critical decision matters. Air Medcare Network's air ambulance providers can bring life-saving care directly to those in need at a moment's notice. With 320 locations across 38 states, they're the largest air ambulance membership network. Rest assured, they've got you and your entire household covered. Membership is just $99 a year or just $79 for seniors. Visit gdo.deals/airmedcare to enroll. Texas Hunter. Since 1954, Texas Hunter Products has produced the best engineered and finest quality feeders and hunting blinds in the industry. The Texas Hunter brand has become synonymous with quality and durability. By sticking to premium standards, the company delivers tough, long-lasting products that meet the real-life needs of anglers and hunters across America. Their fish feeders, deer feeders, hunting blinds, and outdoor accessories are among the highest rated in the industry. You can trust that your purchase from Texas Hunter Products will meet your needs for generations to come. To learn more, visit TexasHunter.com. I'm your host, Joe Baia, here today with my co-hosts, Nick Williams and Butch Theory. Guys, we're not very far from the pre-rut, if we can even figure out what the pre-rut is. You go talk to five guys at the local watering station, I think you get five different answers on what exactly that is or what they think it is or what they mean when they say pre-rut, or if they say, maybe they say the seeking phase. Who knows? You know, deer making scrapes, is that the pre-rut? What we're going to do today is we're going to talk about what the pre-rut is to Travis Lee. And if you wanted to pay attention to somebody and you wanted to gain confidence from somebody, Travis is the guy. Nick, for you, is the pre-rut a period that you've had a lot of success in?
No, to be honest, I was having that conversation with a buddy the other day, and I count myself as one of those hunters. He made a disparaging remark like, well, any doofus can kill deer during the rut. And I'm like, well, I count me as a doofus because I kill most of my deer during peak rut every year. So,
yeah. What about you, Butch? Has that pre-rut period been a time of year where that you really make it a focus to be in the woods, or are you more focused on that early season and peak rut period?
Yeah, man, I think I'm guilty of, you know, kind of calling in the December doldrums, you know, the dead period, and just kind of taking a little break during December, you know, hitting it hard early season. This year I did not so much with the little newborn, but yeah, man, I'm October, early November, and then I camp them out in January. So I'm definitely guilty of the, you know, giving into the December doldrums for sure. So
yeah,
definitely curious to see what Travis has to say about it.
Same here. Yep. Well, that being said, last few years I have started to notice some patterns that I wasn't noticing before, and I'm looking forward to really picking Travis's brain today.
Well, Travis, I appreciate you logging in today to talk about the pre-rut with us a little bit. Tell our listeners a little bit about yourself. I've heard you got some pretty impressive whitetail hunting credentials, and you hunt, you know, down here in our neck of the woods here in the, I guess what would be classified as the Gulf Coastal Plain right here, kind of below the Piedmont, you know, deep south sandy soils. Tell me a little bit about yourself and where you hunt.
I'm 44 years old, got two beautiful kids, beautiful wife, very, very blessed. I grew up in a little town called Baker, Florida. I grew up hunting National Forest. The Eglin Air Force Base is kind of where, right where National Forest was. I grew up dog hunting. Grandpa started taking me hunting when I was 4 or 5 years old, dog hunting. And we did that until we lost our dog hunting rights, and that point, I loved hunting so much that I decided to learn how to steel hunt. And I did that around home there until I was, till I was about 19, 20 years old. And I kind of migrated a little north. Now I hunt here in south, I guess you say south central Alabama. And got a lot of private land. I guess between my wife and I, we probably got about 3,000 acres to hunt, us and the kids, and just kind of progressed into wanting, you know, to hunt mature bucks. Of course, I make sure the kids still have fun, get to shoot. But my wife and I, we pretty much try to hunt mature deer. And I've been blessed probably to kill, you know, over 25 deer over 130 inches here. Wow. In South Alabama. Very proud of that and very addicted to it.
That's awesome. You even did a little guiding at some point, didn't you?
I did. I guided up at Enon Plantation up in Bullitt County for a while, and we've done some of that, some guiding here at home as well. My wife and I both have. So we love it. We're an outdoors family. We don't just deer hunt. We do it all. We love the turkey hunt, and when we're not doing that deer hunting, we're in a bass boat, so we're outdoors year round.
Well, I'm gonna try not to talk about turkey hunting today. We'll save that for another podcast, Travis. Hopefully, I found someone that shares that addiction as much as I have it. But yeah, today we want to talk about that pre-rut period. I'm looking forward to hearing about it.
Sounds good. Me too.
I guess, Travis, the first thing on my mind is you hear the term pre-rut thrown around a lot. And, you know, like our season, I was just telling you, the rut starts in February. The season starts in October. So if you want to play semantics, most of deer season for us is pre-rut. How do you define pre-rut? When do you start looking for pre-rut conditions?
Yeah, pre-rut for me here is really several weeks. Pre-rut to me here, you know, would start around Christmas, and pre-rut to me is, you know, the bucks starting to split up and establish their core areas, obviously working scrapes, rub lines, all the, you know, starting with that and then working all the way in to finding, you know, looking for those first available does, you know, scent checking area, bedding areas, food plots. You know, to me, that's start to end as far as pre-rut here.
So if I'm understanding you correctly, you're talking about, you know, whenever the bucks actually start chasing a little bit, that's technically pre-rut.
Well, I wouldn't say as much as chasing as cruising and looking, searching for those first available does. And for us here, I'm talking about, you know, maybe the 5th through the 12th of January would be that kind of seeking phase, looking for does in my area.
Seeking is a good way to put it, because it's like if you've ever been sitting on a food source and that you see a buck, correct me if I'm wrong, Travis, but you see a buck, he comes out, maybe you've got some does in the field. He comes out and he walks over to those does and he kind of bumps them around a little bit.
Yeah, pushing them around a little
bit.
They're
not really paying him any attention, and then he's going to leave. Like, he's gone, because he's looking. He's out seeking a doe that's come into estrus. Is that what we're looking for here? We're looking for bucks to be more active in the daylight, up on their feet more than they normally would be. And like you said, they're split up and trying to keep tabs on their territory.
That's exactly right. The bucks are ready and the does are not, basically. That's,
story of my
that's
life.
Exactly.
Amen.
Travis, I want to loop back. So, you know, Alabama has such a wide range of ruts, and I just want to help people kind of key in on this a little bit. So DCNR several years ago published a really helpful peak rut map. You said you were looking at the seeking phase being January 5th through the 12th. Do you know when y'all's like average fawn conception date is for your area, or when would you say that most of your does are getting bred?
I'm going to say in that 19th through the 25th time range. And of course, like you mentioned, we're still seeing some of that on into February, but not a lot. It tends to die out here for me after around the 30th of January.
So I'm just trying to do the math on that, and so you would say pre-rut is those 2 to 3 weeks, I guess. Start looking for that 2 to 3 weeks before whenever your peak rut would be.
Yeah, going through my notes, and I've been keeping notes for probably 18 years. The 19th through the 23rd have always been the most magical days for me, as far as seeing numbers of mature bucks, killing mature bucks, and seeing a lot of the chasing.
Yeah, I can mirror that for Dallas County for sure. I always say that January 21st, I've killed 2 or 3 of my biggest bucks actually on the 21st of January. So it seems like the sweet spot for me as well.
Yes, definitely. Same for me.
All right, well, I've got a question for you. While we're defining these phases, we've got what I call an early season phase. And that's where, for me, I'm talking about bucks are still in groups and they're still focused on feeding to bedding. That's what we're hunting. We're hunting feeding areas, the transition areas from bedding areas to feed areas. And on the right day, maybe hunting a bedding area, which is kind of nebulous in the South, right? Like, we don't know exactly where they're bedding, and I don't think they bed in the same spot very many times. But then you've got the pre-rut, the rut, the post-rut. We've really defined those things. What's the phase that we're in right now, Travis? It's where bucks are still grouped up. This is what I noticed on my game camera last night. Bucks are still grouped up, but they are checking scrapes. They're working scrapes. Does this have a phase? Is this a phase right now?
I feel like we're kind of in between phases right now. I don't have a good word for it, but I shot my first buck for this year in Alabama Saturday, and I saw 12 rack bucks that afternoon, and I couldn't count the does, but same, you know, just like you said, they're still in groups. They come out in groups, but the longer the evening goes on watching them, they will split up and start checking scrapes and working scrapes. So they're just kind of in between that feeding pattern and pre-rut. Same yesterday afternoon. I kind of the same deal. I was hunting one particular deer and saw multiple bucks, and they were all still grouped up. But man, there's scrapes literally everywhere you walk right now.
So we're in the pre-pre-rut.
That's right.
Pre-pre-rut.
Would you? I mean, in that pre-pre-rut period, it's probably post what I'd call early season, but are you still hunting it just like you hunt early season? Is that your typical feeding to bedding and hunting transitional patterns in that time frame, or do you put a lot of emphasis on scrapes?
I don't put hardly any emphasis on scrapes whatsoever, to be honest with you. To me, it's a big percentage of it is done at night. I will hunt some scrapes later on, but I would rather be hunting big rubs on the edge of what I know is a good bedding area. I do concentrate really, really hard on bedding areas. That's something that I've always tried to determine where that area is. But I'm a cold front person. I weather trumps everything with me. I hunt those 2 to 3 magical days on cold fronts. If the day of a cold front with the wind blowing, to me, the harder the better is when I'm seeing more mature bucks than any other time. And even, this is something that I first heard Mark Drury say, that first south after a cold front, that always seems to be really good for whatever reason. I can't explain that, but it's really all about cold fronts with me this time of year. I know everyone talks about the December lull, but I don't really see that, honestly, because I'm really hunting on high percentage days, I guess is the best way to put it.
That's interesting you bring that up, because I've been saying over the last few years, and I've gotten to where that's how I hunt now too. I really pick my days. Luckily, I'm in a position where if I want to go hunt during the week, I can, and I can make that time up at work and, you know, on a weekend, even if I want to. So I kind of have control over that to some extent, but it does seem like I just see a lot more deer when I'm hunting now. And it's, It's because I don't hunt. Yeah. I don't hunt when it's hot. I don't like hunting when it's hot, you know.
Yeah, and you're not forcing it.
Yeah, something you said, I really want to key in on it. And you talked about hunting cold fronts and those 2 to 3 magical days. But the day I really want to ask you about is that day that wind is howling. Because in my experience, when I've had success, that's the day I do try to get tight to where I think the deer are bedding, because I feel like I can get away with it. I feel like I know the wind's going to be consistent, and I'm going to be able to cover a lot of my ingress into that spot, if we're talking about hunting in the morning, just by, they're not going to hear me coming. So I kind of take sound and scent out of it on those days. Why do you like those days?
Definitely what you mentioned is part of it, but from what I've seen through the years and all the notes I've kept, those, and yesterday was that magical day, what I call a magical day, and I went in to kill a particular deer, felt like I had a 95% chance of killing him. He showed up 3 minutes after I got down. But on those cold front days, you know, that may be different if you're hunting public land, which I've done a lot of. But on those days, bucks are going to come to green. If you've got a food plot that you're hunting, that you've got a mature deer or your target deer, if he's coming in there at night, I don't care if you got daylight pictures or not. If you've got that plot that he's coming to and he's not being pressured, now you got to look at that too. I'm not saying a plot that's been pressured and had those shot on it, you know, it's a very big, very good chance if the wind is right of you killing that deer on those days of a cold front. The bucks here in South Alabama, they're going to go to green on those days. I couldn't count the amount of deer that are on my wall that were killed on those days. So I like hunting this time of the year just as much as I do the rut, honestly. I tend to lose a lot of my target deer, you know, during the rut, which I'm sure everybody does. But it's just all about keeping up with that weather, watching for those days coming up and being able to be in the woods on those days.
Travis, do you have any theory as to why bucks hit that food? Because my personal theory has always just been, you know, they can't burn wood, they can't put on a jacket. The only thing they can do to stay warm is to burn calories. But I've got buddies in Vermont and New Jersey and Michigan who laugh about the idea of deer getting cold on a, you know, 20, 30 degree day, you know, when their deer are living bedded down in snow. Do you think it's food, or do you think there's something else that drives them to a grain field or a food source?
I really think it's just that drop in temperature that makes them want to go feed. I think that's all there is to it here. I mean, I've just watched it time and time again, and it's hardly ever wrong. You know, if you go into an area and you've got the wind in your favor on those days, he just seems really feeling. Say, I've seen every buck in that area, in that field yesterday. Every single buck that I've got in there, I laid eyes on yesterday except him. And like I say, he popped out right as I left. But I just think it's that drop in temperature and the wind deal. Everybody, I hear people all the time talking about, well, you know, it's too windy today, they're going to be spooky, I'm going to skip today. No, not me. Let it, the heart, as long as it's out of the north or the northwest, the harder it's blowing, the better for me.
I definitely like hunting the cold for lots of reasons. I was in that camp for a long time growing up. I was just, as a boy, I was always told, oh, them deer ain't going to move, it's too windy, they don't like being out there when it's windy.
And that's just because them old men didn't like being out there and it was cold and windy.
Well, I think it was a combination of that, but it was a combination of something that Travis said earlier, which was by the time of the year that you were getting some significant cold fronts in, the whole entire place that we were hunting had been pressured heavily. There had already been probably multiple deer shot off of every green patch we had.
Pressure's and, a big deal.
You know, they were correlating really what was a pressure issue to what was going on with the weather and trying to explain it that way. Cause I'm with you, Travis. I've seen on my place, just, we keep the pressure really low. We're really, really aware of how we enter the property, how we exit the property. I really couldn't tell you the last time I got snorted at. I think we're doing a pretty good job of keeping our pressure down.
Yeah.
And Butch's place is the same way. We've had deer. I mean, they just bed down in the middle of the food plot in the daylight, you know? So it's happening. Pressure is a big deal. But I want to go back to what you were saying about the wind, because you said as long as you've got the right wind. And I think that's a struggle that a lot of guys go through, whether they're hunting public, private, or their own, is all right, it's time to go somewhere this afternoon. Where am I going to go? And I've got, you know, several different places in mind. For you, if we're talking about hunting the green, you know, hunting a food source, how do you want that wind to set up? I personally have gotten to where I really like a crosswind. Like if I'm, you know, if we're just envisioning a food plot that is oriented north and south, and say you've got your stand on the south end of that food plot, I'd prefer a northwest, a west, a northeast, an east. I don't really want a due north wind. I don't really, obviously, don't want anything southerly. What about you? What do you feel like are good winds at where you feel comfortable hunting those food sources?
Yeah, I'm saying, I mean, I'm good with that crosswind too, but I mean, preferably, you know, preferably I want to walk into that stand, that plot with that wind in my face, you know, that's, you know, what I prefer.
Yeah.
I didn't have that yesterday, and I had a crosswind and I got away with it. But yeah, I prefer it being in my face.
You know, thinking about the pre-rut, and you were saying that the rut, you lose a lot of your deer, and I've noticed that too. Do you feel like there's also a good chance that a new deer is going to show up for you in the pre-rut?
No doubt. I mean, that's the excitement. I mean, that's what gets you up on those cold mornings, is never knowing, you know, what may show up that you've never laid your eyes on. I just, as far as my target deer, I like to kill them early, you know, and then be able to hunt the rut and be looking for those big surprises.
Right.
All right, guys, let's take a quick break. Check out a few of this week's great sponsors.
Simple Pets from Pradco Outdoor Brands, makers of the Texas Hunter line of game and fish feeders, comes the latest innovation to your pet care. Meet the Blazer automatic dog feeder. Whether you're at home or away, it serves up perfectly portioned meals to your loyal companion. There's no need for a power outlet. It runs just like your deer or fish feeder with a rechargeable battery. And with a 40-pound capacity and a sturdy stainless steel bowl, it's made for dogs of all sizes, indoors or out. Ready to make life easier for both you and your dog? Visit TexasHunter.com and check out the Blazer automatic dog feeder. Your dog will love it. First South Farm Credit. What does a farm mean to you? Maybe it's just a piece of land where you can go relax or enjoy the outdoors. Whatever the farm means to you, First South Farm Credit can help you finance or refinance that perfect piece of land. As a successful financial cooperative, First South shares its profits with its borrowers in the form of a patronage refund, which lowers your cost of borrowing. To find out how First South can help you, visit their website at firstsouthland.com or call them at 800-955-1722. They are an equal housing lender. 157 Outfitters operates out of southeastern Wyoming, utilizing 100% private leases. They offer hunts for waterfowl, pronghorn, white-tailed deer, mule deer, turkey, and elk. Their area is world-renowned as possibly the most consistent quality waterfowl hunting in the United States. For their deer, antelope, and turkey hunts, they are unique in the ability that they can draw a license for you and get you hunting within 1 year. Hunts are operated out of two lodges on the banks of the North Platte River. Firearms, ammo, and a private chef can all be arranged prior to your arrival. Reserve your spot today at 157outfitters.com.
Travis, when we're talking about the pre-rut, like when do you typically start kind of scouting for it? And you mentioned that you don't put a whole lot of weight on scrapes, but what about rubs and things like that? And do you use like trail cameras to help you out on that?
Yeah, I rely heavily on cameras. You know, I've switched to all cell cameras in the last few years, and I mean, let's be honest, that's been the greatest thing and the most beneficial thing that we've ever got as a hunter. As far as scouting for the rut, yeah, I mean, I'm starting for the pre-rut. right now, and I'm looking for those scrapes, but I'm way more interested in big rubs, especially big rubs on the edge of what I know is a bedding area. That's the kind of areas I like to put cameras. I love to be able to catch those bucks coming in and out of their bedding area and trying to determine what trails they're using. Can't tell you how many big deer I've killed since the cell cameras came out, where I've caught a big deer going into his bed, say at daylight or a couple hours before daylight in that time range. That gets me more excited than anything, because if I've got a good wind, I'm going to be sitting there that afternoon. There, when you catch one like that, I mean, you know the general area where he's bedded, but you also know, you can feel pretty comfortable knowing that he's bedded pretty close. And multiple times that's paid off for me. I've killed those deer in the afternoons coming back out of their bed. But yeah, big rubs is what gets me excited. That's what I'm normally looking for.
I'm kind of the same way. I mean, I like to see a scrape, but I'm not good at keeping a journal. But the bigger deer that I've killed, I've tried to take notes, and just stuff naturally stands out in your memory, right? Like the events around you killing a big buck kind of get burned into your brain. And most of the bigger deer that I've shot here on my little public land swamp, I was within 100 yards of scrape or of a rub that was at least waist high. Like down here, that seems to be the thing. Like if you get one that comes up to your hip, or if I lean my gun against a tree, if that rub goes up to the top of the barrel, and then big enough, something that I look for a lot is you can see gouges from his antler bases having a little perlation to them, you know, like a little spike will rub on something. It looks like you just rubbed it with a bastard file, you know, it's smooth. And then you get some rubs where you'll see the tree behind it is tore up and everything. You say you don't pay much attention to scrapes, but what about situations like to me, I'm much more interested in a scrape if there's several scrapes. Like if I can stand in one area and see four or five scrapes, and especially if I can see those big rubs, do scrapes get interesting to you if you find scrapes in areas where you're finding those big rubs? Or
yeah, definitely. Like especially if I know I'm right on the edge of what I feel like is a core area or a bedding area. Absolutely, that gets me excited. I mean, my favorite place to bed there in the rut is 100 to 200 yards off of a thicket, preferably where there's a lot of that kind of sign that we're talking about. And they get to chasing does in those thickets, and they're going to hit those open areas. And that's my all-time favorite place to be.
Travis, you were talking about trying to pinpoint the specific trails that a buck is using to get back into his bedding area, setting up cameras. And then when you get that, maybe that real early morning pick, you know, you're getting excited, you're going back in that area, and you're finding that deer coming back out in the evening.
Yes.
Where do you like to hunt in the mornings? Like, what gets you excited for a morning hunt? Is it the same types of locations? Are you going to stick it out in that area? Or do you focus on other types of travel corridors during the pre-rut?
I'm hunting some of those same areas, but, you know, what I prefer to morning hunt is those, you know, cutovers that you can still see in, you know, planted pines on up to 3-4 foot high, or that you can get in the climbers and still see down in them. That's my favorite thing to hunt in the mornings. But yeah, still those same areas that's got a lot of big rubs on the edge of a cutover or planted pine thicket. I hunt a lot of SMZs in the mornings. Really love hunting those. I think a lot of folks down here can relate to them as well. And those bigger deer will use those SMZs a lot to travel in and out of those bedding areas, back and forth to food as well.
Whenever you start hunting close to bedding like that, I always feel like you got to pay very close attention to getting in and getting out. And like you were talking about with the food plot example earlier, like what is your scent doing when you're getting in and getting out? When you find a buck like what you're describing, he's daylighting or close to daylighting on a trail going back into a bedding thicket. How do you like to hunt that? I mean, is that something where you like to stay back off of it a certain distance? Is it all about ingress and egress? Kind of take me through how you set up for a deer like that.
I want to leave some distance in between that bedding area, preferably 100, 200 yards, to give that deer some room, especially if it's deer in a rut. You don't want to be sitting right on top of the bedding area and have them, have a buck run a doe out and then catch your scent and just wheel back in. You want to preferably give some distance between you and the bedding area to give, have some room there, is what I like to do, prefer to do.
You mentioned that buck you're after, he was 3 minutes too late for you. I think we've all experienced that. And what I think about what that is all right, where was he 20 minutes ago? Like, where was he 20 minutes ago before he got to that food source? Do you feel like during this time frame that these bucks are bedded so close that he may have been bedded down? If he hit that field 3 minutes, after you left, do you think he was bedded down 10 minutes earlier? Or do you think he was coming a long distance?
That's a good question. Something I thought about all night.
I kept you up last night.
That scenario, where he's really been bedding is about, 200 to 300 yards from that field I was sitting on. So he could have very well been coming to the field. He could have been standing right in the edge, browsing or on acorns, letting all them younger bucks get out there and, just waiting on dark. It's hard to say in that particular setup.
Well, so this goes back to the pressure thing. And I think this is where it's just a tough decision. But, if I was hunting that deer, what would be going through my mind would be, well, I could push in there further and try to catch him in that quote unquote staging area before he got to the food source. And maybe if I'm sitting back in there, I get him right before dark, before he gets to that field. The other side of me says, or I could just keep the pressure down and go hunt it again. And maybe tomorrow he slips up and comes in there 5 minutes earlier because he's not feeling pressured. All that's going to depend on where you hunt. If you hunt public, you're probably going to push in and be aggressive. If you're hunting a piece of private that you have total control over, I'm probably going to sit back and wait and let him make the mis first mistake. The middle ground is the leased land, I think, though, because leased land is kind of a mixture of public and private. There's nothing stopping one of your other leaseholders from going in there tomorrow and screwing it all up. So, what do you do?
Well, I mean, most people, if that scenario yesterday would have happened to them, most guys are going to be sitting there right now. But the wind has switched out of the northeast, and I know I go in there. If I would have went there today, I would have busted does, and I would have blew him out of there. So knowing the area, knowing there's not going to be any pressure there, I'm going to wait on the next north wind to go back hunt that deer, and I know I'll kill him. But like you said, if I was hunting in a lease or public, I would probably, if there was an area where I could get in there closer and get up a tree, I would probably push it. But we're talking about what I feel like is a 6.5-year-old deer, maybe even seven. He's smart. He's seen it all.
Yeah, and he knows that area as well as you think you know it. He knows it a lot better.
I'm sure.
And that's the thing about hunting in the South. The Deep South is you can kind of know where he's bedding, but you don't know exactly where he's bedding. Like it's not like he's over there in that particular block of timber, unless and maybe you do know. I've never been able to pinpoint one like that down to a very small area. I've always felt like, okay, I think he's in this block of pines, which might be, 8 acres or something. But I don't know. Do you feel like you can pinpoint them down
Yeah,
to?
A lot of times I have on this deer because I hunted him pretty hard during bow season. And this deer, he's living in, he's really, what his core bedding area is probably about 10 acres, and it butts right up to a big neighborhood of a bunch of houses.
Mm.
I was getting this picture 15 yards off of someone's yard. he's got this one little area in there that he really loves, and he very well could have came from there yesterday.
Yeah, very cool. Very well. Earlier you were saying that, you know, you really want to hunt that hard north wind, and you said they're going to go to green on that hard north wind. Is that now and in the pre-rut? And does that kind of change your hunting strategy moving on into the year? Is that just your strategy?
That is 100% all year long from beginning to end. Because when you get into the rut, it's going to be the same way. Even though the bucks don't have the food on their mind as much, the does do.
That's right.
If you will watch that calendar and hunt those 2 and 3 days, and unfortunately we don't have the weather like we used to have. It's getting
right.
The cold aren't nothing like what they used to be. And I'm thinking about going crappie fishing this weekend because of the east wind. We just don't have the cold like we used to. But if you will base your year from beginning to end around those cold fronts, and like I say, don't be afraid to hunt that south, that first south after a front that we get sometimes, because for whatever reason, it seems to always be good. If you'll hunt those days, you're going to have a successful season if you play the wind right. Like this deer I'm talking about, you know, like I said, most guys would go back hunting this afternoon, but you let that deer smell you. You may get away with it one time. You may bust him one time and get another chance, but you do it a couple times and you can hang him up to the rut and your neighbor's probably going to end up killing him then.
Right. Yeah. Then the luck card plays into it. All right. Well, I'm going to give you a specific scenario, and I'm just going to use myself as the example. I'm hunting a piece of private land that I own. I don't have to worry about anybody legally hunting it except for me and the folks that I know are hunting it. So I have pretty much total control over the pressure. I have nothing to worry about in that regard. If I've got a consistent food source, like a food plot, and I know historically that bucks tend to use the downwind side of that food plot to scent check it, and I've seen bucks in that area, you know, I've watched them come out of that downwind side, come into that food source during the seeking phase that we're talking about, and visually check that field. And if they don't see a doe, they're kind of moving on. They'll walk through it, you know, and walk out the other side. In a scenario like that, are you ever going to hunt in that what likes to be termed staging area on that downwind side of that field, or do you feel like the risk of pressuring that deer is not worth it?
No, I would definitely love hunting those areas. And I think a lot of times killing those bigger, mature bucks, that's probably your best option. Because a lot of those big deer, like you said, they scent check them fields. And a lot of the times you don't ever see them. They'll get around on the downwind side and check it. If they don't win the doe, they're moving on. So, yeah, absolutely. If it's an area, you know, if it's not too thick, if you can get on that end of that field and hunt, that's where you could kill some of your bigger deer for sure.
Do you feel like you'd prefer to be there than hunting over the food source? Like if you've got to give up being able to see that food source and actually shoot something that were to enter that food source, you're okay with giving that up?
Yeah, depending on the scenario and the terrain, but yes, absolutely. Especially if I'm zeroed in on a really big deer, definitely I'll take that risk anytime.
We were talking about scrapes a little bit earlier, and you mentioned, you know, as far as your hunting strategy goes, you don't, like, if you see them, other than them being paired with a giant rub that you've identified, that you don't put a lot of weight to those scrapes on your hunting strategy. But what about mock scrapes? Do you ever use any bait and switch there?
I have done some of that and had good luck of getting bucks on camera, but there again, just being honest, my 98% of what I have saw has been nighttime. I can't, we can walk through all the deer I've got mounted, and I can't point out one that and tell you that, I killed him on a scrape line. He was working a scrape or coming to a scrape. I just really don't see that. I've had a lot better luck hunting around some big rubs than I have the scrapes. Yeah, and I know there's best in it. I just, to me, it's just not a high percentage deal.
I've not had good luck with making my own scrapes and kind of trying to bring them in. But I wonder if, you make a couple of scrapes or a scrape line and put some time into it and maybe put some actual good scent in there, if it just keeps them in that same area or anything like that.
Yeah, the most I've put some, I'm a big Drury fan, and I've put some of the scrape trees up on some fields and made the mock scrapes, and I've had really good luck with that. I would say, getting pit, if you're wanting to get pictures of a lot of different bucks in that area, it's definitely worth trying for sure.
What about, so, and Travis, there seems to be two school of deer hunters. I mean, you can break the group up a lot of different ways, but like two major camps you have. I have a buddy who is very much like a leave no trace deer hunter. Like, he wants to get in, hunt, get out. And his theory is that bucks, they're not curious. Like, if they're not smart, they're at least cautious, and they don't like new novel experiences, right? Like, they're the old, like the old fuddy duddy man in his armchair, right? He don't want a new book or a new magazine or a new flavor of ice cream. He wants everything to be that it's been the way for the past 40 years. He don't want nothing new and novel. So he's 100% against calling, scents, mock scrapes, everything like that. Like, scent lock suit, rubber boots, everything. I've traditionally been in that camp, but I've got a little girl now, and my time in the woods is limited. I've always been the type, just get into woods. And it's like, well, if you're in a good place with good sign and you sit there long enough, you'll kill deer. Well, then you get some time constraints and you start looking at all that stuff that they sell on the wall. You start looking, like Butch was saying, about, you start seeing scents. You start seeing people talk about manipulating deer with mock scrapes. You start looking at calls and stuff like that. Do you ever play with calls or try to manipulate, like force a deer into doing something that you want them to do?
Yeah, I would say, I'm probably the total opposite I'm cautious, but I think we tend to make it way more complicated than what it is. Sometimes calls from about, well, let's just say from Christmas day on, there's not going to be a day that I'm not blowing a grunt call, and I'm going to at least snort wheeze a few times. Had a lot of success with that. Haven't had the success with the rattling like some guys have. I'll do it, but I can't tell you one time that I've rattled in a mature deer. The snort wheeze has been deadly for me here and in the Midwest. I've caught a lot of good bucks to me with snort wheeze, and I kind of always, I follow three or four grunts up with a snort wheeze. It's just a habit I have. Sure, you run some off sometimes. I'm not going to sit here and tell you don't, but it's worth the risk with what I have killed, calling them in. And as far as the scents, I've had a lot of success over the years with scents, with Tinks and Code Blue. It's just got to be the right, perfect. Got to be some luck involved there in the perfect scenario, but I'm not afraid of either one of them, that's for sure.
So I'm particularly interested with scents. So since Joe gave you a scenario, I'll give you a scenario at the risk of turning this podcast into just us looking for, personal deer hunting tips.
I think we're past that at this point.
That's clearly why we started it to begin with. So
this is my first year running trail cameras. Like I said, you get a kid and you start looking for some help. You look for that extra edge. And I was really surprised to see down here that you had scrapes and rubs going on as early as like opening day of gun season. Like, I've got pictures of little bucks sparring next to scrapes. I got pictures of little bucks chasing does around through creek crossings and stuff like that. So I'm learning some new things. And I've got, at this point, I've got enough good scrapes and good areas where I've killed deer in the past. And I've kind of just got those cameras up there to kind of keep an eye on things and learn and get a feel for what's in the woods. And that's actually helped because I've passed now on two small bucks, a little basket rack and a spike that in years past I may have shot just so that I didn't have to sit up in that tree on a cold day any longer, just so I could get down and warm up. But you know, it's in the area and you hold off on it. But I'm kind of curious, like I've had a lot of bucks come and they hit a scrape and then they're just gone. Like I've had five different bucks hit this one scrape and they don't make any return visits. You talk about having luck with scent. So the thought has crossed my mind to pour a bottle on that scrape, to pour a buck scent and just throw them a curveball. Just see if they responded to there being a new buck in the area. Do you think that's something worth doing, or would you recommend a different strategy there using scents on scrapes?
I would definitely try that. I've saw scenarios when that works. The luck I've had with the scents, it has been using the scent moms or cotton balls and having a deer, you know, winding it, checking the area and coming to me that way. I've had that I've had success with that multiple times, you know, where I've took the deer and passed on the deer. So that's kind of the way I've used the scent. I don't like putting them on food plots. You tend to spook a lot of does. I'd rather do that when I'm hunting the woods or morning hunting, or, you know, in those situations.
Definitely makes sense. I agree with you, Travis. I feel like I definitely personally overthink way too much whenever it comes to deer, as opposed to, you know, just trying different things. And I do break out the grunt call, you know, after that Christmas break time frame. And more times than not, I feel like I'm disrupting more than I'm actually doing good. Is there a scenario? Are you just blind grunting? How often are you grunting? And is there a scenario where you will not grunt?
Yes, normally I'm going, you know, if I'm hunting the woods, I'm going to pick it up every 20 or 30 minutes.
Wow. Okay.
But you know, yes, definitely. I've saw it spook deer, but it's worked for me enough times that I'm willing to take the risk, I guess is the best way to put it. You know, I'm not going to be sitting on a food plot and blowing a grunt like a trumpet. And I will. If I'm sitting on a field and it's getting to that, you know, that 30 minutes before dark, you know, I will pull a grunt out and grunt a few times. But I would say more often when I'm hunting the woods is when I'm really, really using it. And like I say, I'm willing to take the risk. Like I say, the snore wheeze has been really deadly for me over the years.
You know, everything you've talked about, it sounds like you put an emphasis on the pressure that it applies as well. You know, like you were saying earlier, yes, you like to use scent, but you don't want to walk out into a food plot to apply it, because the value you gain in applying that scent is lost by spooking the does that are probably bedded 50 to 75 yards away, you know, off the edge of the field.
Yeah, when the does come out on field and smell that scent bomb, most of the time they're going to get spooked and start blowing, and you know the bucks that was following them or coming in later are going to end up getting spooked. So I definitely don't like to do, you know, do it on a field like that.
Yeah, well, I just think pressure is huge. I mean, I love talking about strategies for early season, pre-rut, rut, postseason, you know, and really having a step-by-step guide to be able to do that. It's a hard thing to nail down in the deep South, I feel like, is to say, all right, here's step one, here's step two. But I think the thing that gets glossed over, a lot of the hunting literature that's out there, a lot of the how-to advice is out there, is just the pressure factor, how much pressure you're putting on an area. So I've got the luxury of hunting in a very low pressure area, and we manage it that way. You mentioned that you do some hunting on public land as well. When you're hunting in a high pressure area like that during the pre-rut, how do you handle it? Do you have any tips for finding maybe less pressured areas, or do you hunt the pre-rut differently when you know you're hunting a pressured property?
Yeah, definitely. You know, when you're studying, everybody's uses, I use Onyx and I use Hunt Stand and Swell, but for the public, you know, first of all, you got to set back and kind of set your goals. You know, what is your goal? Is your goal to kill a a buck, just a buck, a rack buck. You know, for me, my goal, and it's, you know, it's tough. My goal is to kill a 4.5-year-old deer. You know, I tend not to try not to shoot anything under 130 inches. And if that's your goal, then, you know, the pressure part is way more important than if your goal is just to go out there and kill a buck, you know, a rack buck. And on the public land, when I'm studying a map, I'm not looking for those pretty areas. I'm not looking for those, you know, we all love to hunt hardwoods, but I'm avoiding that when I'm looking at public stuff, because that's where everyone's going to go. I'm looking for those areas that are really ugly and trying to find those little sweet spots in those ugly areas, if that makes sense. That's kind of how I approach public land.
Getting off the beaten path, for sure. I mean, it's just a different mindset. You've got to think that way from the beginning, because when I walk through a patch of woods, I'm just naturally drawn to the pretty spot, like you said. Like, you know, you get into the wide open hardwoods, and boy, it sure would be nice to climb up a tree and sit in here in the morning. And it's almost like you kind of mentally go back to hunting videos you've seen. And, well, I've seen bucks walk through here, you know, on those hunting videos I'll watch. But no, when I think back to, you know, the mature deer I've taken over the years, unless if I was hunting a pressured piece of property, I killed them in some nasty thick stuff. And it was like, a lot of it was cutovers, like you were talking about, like this really nasty, uneven, 2-3 years old, you can only see down in it if you get up high type stuff. And that's what I was saying earlier about using the wind to camouflage your sound. Because a lot of times to get back and hunt in those areas, you're going to make a bunch of racket, you know, you're going to make a bunch of racket getting back in there.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I'm looking for on public, for sure. Or like I mentioned earlier, that little skinny 50 yard wide SMZ that's coming out of one of the, you know, thick areas that no one can hunt. That's like you said, if you can get in there without blowing everything out, that can be a deadly area to get in.
All right, folks, we're going to be right back. Y'all take a minute and check out some of our sponsors, Baker Metalworks and Dixie Supply. Baker Metalworks and Dixie Supply offer numerous items to help get your project done right the first time. They carry a variety of different panel profiles and your choice of colors and gauges with all the matching trim and accessories. They also offer a full line of hardware items and post-frame building design. Their friendly and knowledgeable sales representatives are always willing to help answer any questions or concerns you may have. Contact them with any questions or to get a free estimate today. Baker Metalworks and Dixie Supply, your metal roofing headquarters. Southern Seed and Feed. Do you want to provide better nutrients to your deer? If so, try Southern Buck Food Plot Blends. Your deer will love it. At Southern Seed and Feed, they specialize in making textured feed for horses, cattle, sheep, goats, hogs, chickens, small animals, and wildlife. Their products are proven irresistible, scientifically formulated to promote excellent herd health and hunter satisfaction. They supply products to various distributors throughout the South. So visit their website at southernseedfeed.com or call 662-726-2638 to find the dealer nearest you. Travis, I was saying earlier, asking you about hunting those staging areas, those downwind areas. You know, I think most of everybody that's hunting in the deep South, coastal plain, they're hunting food plots as a primary food source, and they may have a feeder in that food plot area, but that's typically the way we hunt down here in the Piney Woods. So when it comes to thinking about like that staging area, what brings that to mind was actually a hunt. It occurred last year during the pre-rut. It was the week after Christmas. Had a friend of mine in town from Montana, and he really wanted to kill a deer with his old lever action 30-30 iron sights, and he didn't want to do it from a tree stand. He wanted to shoot a buck from the ground. And I said, all right, well, you know, if I was setting myself up the way you're setting yourself up, I think I'd go hunt this area downwind of this food plot. It's kind of a pinch point in between the food plot and the creek. Like if you get down in there and just get in the right spot, you should be able to pretty much see anything that comes down that little corridor. And sure enough, the first afternoon he got down in there, he got a shot at a nice Alabama 8-point, and that was a memorable pre-run hunt for me. And it also taught me the lesson of, we actually, my wife was actually sitting on that field, watching the field, and he was hunting back in the woods. And the deer that he ended up shooting, that deer was not going to go into that field. He was just paralleling that field and was scent checking it. There was nothing out there, so he was moving on down the creek. And I want to know if you've got any memorable pre-rut hunts that taught you those kind of lessons about hunting during that time.
Man, you made me think of something else we hadn't talked about. We can all relate to select cuts. Man, getting in those select cut pines off of the field, like what you're talking about, can be absolute dynamite. You know, getting 200 to 300 yards off your food source in those select cut pines where you can see. I've had a lot of success doing that. Yeah, I can think of a lot of stories. And yeah, maybe. It's been about 4 years ago. It was probably during Christmas break. I was getting a picture of a big deer coming in and out of a cutover. It was pretty, you know, pretty. It was at that stage where you couldn't see in it anymore, and I had a good wind, a northwest wind that afternoon, and I set up. I took toted a climber in. And climbed about 150 yards off the cutover, and I could hear. It hadn't been there probably 30, 40 minutes, and I could hear some horns. You know, some tickling, not fighting. Some two bucks, just you know, just sparring light tickling horns. And I, of course, first thing I'm gonna do when I hear that is grunt. And I grunted 3 or 4 times, nothing. Didn't hear any response. A few minutes later, I did a snore wheeze, and almost immediately, the deer responded to me, snort wheeze back at me, and immediately could hear him coming, breaking limbs. And when he come out of the cutover, he was actually twirling his head, you know, around. He was so mad, all the hair was stood up on his back. And that deer was snort wheezing so hard, it was almost like he was getting choked.
He's fired up.
I will never forget that the rest of my life. But that, you know, of course, I was able to kill him. But that's one of the most memorable pre-rut hunts I could think of. And that's when I really got fired up about the snort wheezing down south, because where I hunt in North Missouri, it's so deadly. If you see a mature deer up there and the wind's right, most of the time he's going to come to you in that pre-rut, you know, time frame, Halloween, that time frame. But it can be just as deadly down here in the right scenario.
You got me fired up. I don't believe I have ever snort wheezed at a deer.
Me
And
either.
it.
Like I said, I overthink it. I always think I'm messing up more than I'm doing good. So I'm just always, you know, I'm reluctant on that always.
It sound, but I'm sure it's one of those things where you've got to have some success with it,
That's right.
and then
Yeah.
you're like, well,
Oh, yeah.
like you know, like we were saying, and like you said, Travis, potential benefits outweigh any risks, you know, like you can spook a deer
Oh,
walking
yeah.
in. So I might
Right.
spook deer all the time, you know, so might as well try something. And do you feel like when you're being aggressive with your calling like that, do you feel like it spooks mature deer some too? Or do you feel like it's mostly spooking deer that you probably were going to pass on anyway?
Yeah, I guess the only proof I've had, you know, multiple times is those deer that I wasn't going to shoot anyways.
Right.
You know, if it's spooking mature deer, I you know, I can't prove it.
Right.
But it's so, you know, a lot of people are scared of it, but it's so common. I mean, I hear it a lot, and a lot of times there's a, you know, snort wheeze. It's, you know, and it's not just like you hear Michael Waddell do it. It's there's a lot of different variations to that. You know, I'll hear bucks do it a lot of times, and it'll be real faint, you know, it's not as strong out. But it's really common, and it's definitely worth doing for sure. Trying.
Do you have a particular call you like, or do you just do it with your mouth?
I have done it with my mouth and been successful, but I prefer and it's an older call. I believe it is one of the bone collector calls. I've got a pile of them, but I think it was, I don't remember who it's made by. I think it's Wild Game Innovations made it. And I think it was the Bone Collector Edition is my favorite one. Woodhaven, my buddies at Woodhaven, they make a really good one too that I use.
You've got me, Travis. You've got me. I had a browser tablet pulled up and I'm pulling up Woodhaven Snortweed calls right now. That ought to tell you something about how fired up I am.
Man, if you're hunting a deer, you got to do it. You know, start about Christmas and it's going to pay off for you. And it's, you know, it's, like I say, I've been rattling all my life and I can't tell you one mature deer I've rattled in.
Yeah.
But yeah. I try because one day I want to be able to tell somebody that I rattled a buck in. But I can sit here and tell you there's bucks on my wall that's died because of a snort wheeze and a grunt. Some big, you know, one, you know, up to 160 inches in Alabama.
Wow.
It works. You got it. If he can get your wind, you know, you're not going to have success. But in the right scenarios and you got the right wind, it is absolutely deadly.
I'm going to have to try it this year because I can't tell you how many times I've sat here in a palmetto patch or on the edge of some switch cane or like where I was sitting today. I had 7 deer come by my stand and they came from, you know, down different trails, same general direction, but like you couldn't see these deer until you would catch glimpses of them at 50 yards. You know, I tell people all the time I hunt my rifle deer. I shoot most of my rifle deer at 20 or 30 yards because that's all that you can see down here in the swamp. And I can't tell you how many times I've sat there and after staring for 3, 4, 5 hours into the switch cane that I'm hunting on the edge of, it's like, man, like I'd like to have something to get him out. You know, like what if he's just right there, just 20 yards inside, just laid up, just hanging out, chilling, and I'm fixing to have to leave here in the next hour. Like,
time to snort wheeze, Nick.
Now I guess I'm going to have to start snort wheezing at him, see what happens.
Yep. One mode unless you try.
That's right.
Well, Travis, you've given us a bunch of great advice. I know I'm going to apply a lot of what I've learned to my place. Coming up here, like you said, kind of right around Christmas time is when I really start to see what we call the pre-rut, what I call the pre-rut, that seeking phase. That's when I look for it to begin. If you're talking to hunters in the deep south and you're talking to guys that hunt public, private, leased land, no matter what it may be, if you could give one piece of advice to all those hunters for targeting these deer in the pre-rut, what would it be?
Best advice, pay attention to the wind. Hunt those cold front days. If any way possible, take advantage of the cameras and try to determine what you feel like a buck's bedding area is. And sometimes that takes, you know, hanging those cameras on scrapes and rubs and finding a particular deer and then backtracking him to that area, trying to cut the distance. And, you know, you can backtrack a buck a lot of times and find that area where he's bedding, spending most of his time. But yeah, I would say cold fronts, getting close to those bedding areas with a good wind and some good sign be my best advice.
That's really good advice, Travis. We really appreciate you joining us on Hunting Land today, man. It's been a pleasure. Like Joe said, I've learned a lot and I'm definitely going to have to investigate the snort wheeze a little bit more and not be afraid to grunt, it sounds like.
Sounds good.
Thanks for joining us, man. We appreciate it.
Thank y'all.
All right, folks, we're going to be right back. Y'all take a minute and check out some of our sponsors. Bucks Island Marine. At BucksIsland.com, you can check out the full list of inventory from new and used bass, pontoon, and bow rider style boats, new and used motors, as well as kayaks. They love trade-ins, which provides a steady stream of used boats, and they can rig your boat at their 18-bay service department or ship your new motor anywhere in the United States. They provide boat service on all kinds of boats, even if they weren't purchased from Bucks. They have factory-trained and certified technicians, so visit them at 4500 Highway 77 in Southside, Alabama, or give them a call at 256-442-2588. Well, guys, I don't know about you, but I'm a little bit more fired up for the pre-rut this year than I've been in previous years. I always liked that time of year, but I got some ideas now about what I'm going to do. Nick, what was your big takeaway? What are you taking with you to the pre-rut, the Deep South pre-rut,
There's a lot of gold in there, but I think the one that kind of hit me hardest as far as like actionable information that I'm fixing to implement is I've always been scared of tanks and code blue. You don't want to mess anything up. You hear about how quote unquote smart big bucks are, and I've just never had the confidence. But when you hear somebody who's killed that many deer over 130 inches say that they've had success killing big bucks with scent, like that may give me the push that I need to go out and buy a bottle and start playing with it. So what about you, Butch?
Yeah, man, not being scared to spook a deer, sounds like the pros of kind of just putting it out there a little bit. I've never snort wheezed in my life, and I don't think I've ever heard a deer snort wheeze either, which I thought was very interesting that he said he hears it all the time. So maybe I'm just not listening hard enough. I don't know. I thought I had pretty good hearing, but I'm gonna have to work on that. And
Well,
yeah, just not being scared to do something a little bit out of the ordinary.
Butch is going to let his freak flag fly this season.
I'm gonna get out there and wheeze my butt off.
I like it, man. Like you're saying, we're so well, you and I are very, and I've learned a lot of my tendencies from you and your family. But like the older I've gotten, the less pressure I want to put on anything. I'm just like tiptoeing
Makes a
around
big
and
difference, man. And I think a lot
getting.
of people kind of don't understand pressure either. I mean, it comes in many different forms. I mean,
Right.
yeah.
It's not always what it sounds like when you say pressure. But yeah, like I kind of swung to that end of the spectrum, right? Of no pressure, no pressure, no pressure. To hear somebody that's been that successful say, apply the right kind of pressure and apply pressure depending on the situation you're in. And, like me hunting a 200 acre piece of private land where that's all I've got. Like I got to make it happen on my 200. Yeah, I can keep that property low pressure, but at the same time, like it's just 200 acres. So, sometimes you got to go for broke. That deer may be on your property today, not on your property tomorrow. And it was really key to me what Travis was saying about hunting those fronts, because that's one way
Definitely.
you can definitely keep pressure down. If you say to yourself, I'm only going to hunt, I'm only going to be in the woods on those 3 magical days, and you go back and look at last year, look at last
Guarantee
season.
you, it was they stacked up.
How many days did you really have to hunt? You didn't have that many. So that naturally keeps pressure down right there. And then when he does hunt, it sounds like he's being aggressive on the right days. So pressure isn't a factor necessarily of, what you do on the property. It's just being on the property at all. And then, like he was saying about cellular game cameras, I was happy to write an article on the early season that we'll publish next year. They're a true game changer. I mean, it's one of those things that word gets thrown around a lot, but cellular cameras used effectively and not being scared to spend the money. You got to spend the money. It allows you to hunt, it allows you to be in more than one place at the same time.
Yeah,
And
you're hunting while you're not hunting.
that's right. So, bunch of good stuff. Really enjoyed that talk with Travis.
Yep, good show today, boys.
Well, that's going to wrap it up for us this week. Appreciate you joining us. We want to make it easy for you to listen. So here's a handy option for you. To get the podcast emailed to you each week, just text the word hunting to 773-770-4377. Again, just text the word hunting to 773-770-4377. You'll join our email list. And wherever you are listening to the podcast, go ahead, subscribe, rate, and review. Send us a written review. We'd love to hear from you. If you've got a show topic that you are interested in and like to see us cover, just email us at pros@landhunting.com. That's going to do it for us. Y'all stay safe out there. We'll talk to you next time.